recorded live at Universal Studios Hollywood. We're talking about the new show to talk about being in high school, but it's sketch comedy? That'll never work. We're talking about Welcome Freshmen. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to your new favorite show, The More You Nerd, where, oh yes, that's right, it's Nick Vimber 2, and we are here today to talk about a show that is all but forgotten in the pantheon of Nickelodeon original content, Welcome Freshmen. But I need the annoying history teacher that butts into my conversation at the mall. Miles, how are you, my friend?
I am good. I was going to do a whole Mervumentary bit and then just thought better of it.
Yeah. Big same. Big same.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I don't think that's the mall.
No, it's a mall. There's a map in the background.
I thought it was the a Galleria in the high school, because I remember there's a sign for the high school in the background.
In the hallway there is, but they are meant to, at least in the first couple of seasons, be hanging out at the mall, because that was a thing that kids did back in the 1990s.
You don't need to explain the mall to me.
Oh, I'm explaining it. I'm just saying that to listeners in case they... my name is Drew, by the way. I didn't introduce myself. Hi.
I thought you did.
I don't know. I introduced you.
Ow. I just assumed you introduced yourself before you introduced me.
I usually do, but I think I messed it up today because I was trying to get through this thing that I came up with on the spot, which was complicated and difficult. Anyway, so Welcome Freshmen is a show that aired for 4 seasons, which I was kind of surprised about, although they were very short seasons, even for the time. 13 episodes, basically 13 episodes each season.
Which... it's kind of par for the course for Nickelodeon for a lot of its shows. Like, I mean,
you say that it was either they only had 12 episodes or they had 100 episodes a year.
Well, I mean, I can't think of many from the orange years that didn't. Like, I mean, Clarissa's got 5 seasons and 65 episodes.
I'm talking more like Double Dare was a weekly
Double
show.
Double Dare was a game show. That's a very different thing.
Nick Arcade had a bunch of episodes. I only know that because
I'm talking about their actual TV shows. Like, as iconic as Salute Your Shorts was to us, like, back in the day, that show only had 2 seasons.
It was 2 seasons, and they were short. Hey Dude was very short. I think we talked about a lot of this when we talked about Clarissa and when we talked about Salute Your Shorts. But of course, the big difference, as we talked about last week, when we talked about Space Cases, is that at least those shows are partially available. So much of the Nickelodeon Orange Years era is just not on anything. And this year, we are really focusing, with one exception, for a very particular reason, is stuff that just you can't just go out and find. And I'll be honest, I don't really know why you can't go out and find it. I mean, I kind of know.
I mean, there are some, like with Brent Stimpy, with Pete and Pete, where we've always been told something about music rights. Okay, fair enough. There was a lot of licensed music and licensed music people in that show. I could see how that might be a hang up.
But even then, that seemed to be the case more for the third season DVDs than it did for the first 2 seasons, because the first 2 seasons all had music by that one band. And if they released the first 2 seasons on DVD, why don't they just release the first 2 seasons on streaming?
Because it could have been like a specific song that maybe Polaris didn't do. I mean, because this show had Michael Stipe, Iggy Pop. There's probably something somewhere that they did that was integral to an episode that they just can't like take out. But you know, I'm kind of just perusing. I think the only show that I can really see that had one, it did take off, I remember that, but had what we would consider normal seasons, was Alex Mack, because the first season is 13, and we'll talk about that later, but 2, 3, and 4 are 20, 25, and 20 episodes. And that's very rare for Nickelodeon.
Yeah, for sure. But that was also kind of a different era. And that's something that we're really going to talk about with this show in particular.
How's Next Door to 94?
Well, again, that's exactly what I'm talking about, basically. Because what this show teaches me, what Welcome Freshman teaches me, is that there was a transitionary period where after this show ended, Nickelodeon was in a different place, and they really started doing a lot of other things.
I would say yes and no.
For example, I guess SNCC started in 92, so that's not quite the same thing. But anyway, let's talk about Welcome Freshman. So Welcome Freshman is in the line of teen sketch comedy shows. I was thinking a lot about this when I was watching the show. I was thinking a lot about You Can't Do That on Television, which, though it aired on Nickelodeon in the United States, is a Canadian TV show. This was all done, as we learned in our research, filmed in Universal Studios, Florida, on that actual, you know, because they actually filmed stuff there when they when it was open, which is
I've been to Nickelodeon Studios, Florida.
Yeah, my wife has. I never did. I never got to go.
My experience. I mean, again, I was so young, but I just remember feeling like I was like at Mecca. Because, like, we've talked about this when we did the first Nickvember. There was a time where, like, Nickelodeon was not only the best children's programming and youth programming ever, but, like, it was also, like, there was a specific thing that made Nickelodeon really align with its audience. I can't think of a particular time where, like, there has been such a, like, representation of the youth than that era of Nickelodeon.
You're absolutely right. And part of that is because it did feel like grounded is not the right word, but I don't have a better one. Like we looked into the creation of this show filmed in Florida. It used a cast of just kids from Florida, just kids from the area. And it was at a time when they only filmed episodes on weekends. So these kids were still going to school Monday through Friday and then going and recording a TV show on the weekend, which is just such like that's definitely something that doesn't happen anymore, especially not in some of the more recent, bigger Nickelodeon shows that are clearly much more part of a system that was being built out from here. So this show is set up as if it's, you know, because the kids talk to the camera. They are students at Hawthorne High School. They are all freshmen. And you have Walter, who's sort of the lovable doofus. You have Kevin, who is like the cool guy. You have Merv, who is the huge nerd. You have Tara, who's like the flower child kind of, that was very in vogue at the time.
She's this weird marriage of, yeah, flower child, cares about like animal testing, all that stuff. And then also like standard teenage girl.
Yes. Which is realistic. Let's face it.
Absolutely. And then you get Alex.
And then you have Alex, who is like, it's funny. Alex feels like she is from the 1980s. And I mean, this show started in 1991. So it's very close to the 80s.
Yeah.
And so
she's got big Lisa Tuttle vibes.
Yes, yes. She is. She cares about fashion. She cares about being cool. It's a Saved by the
Bell reference for you young people.
Yes. But again, another part of that, because I'm glad you mentioned Saved by the Bell, the big part of this show is that all four of these kids are literally, when they're recording this first season, 14 years old. They are all the age of a high school freshman.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, even then, it's so refreshing to see like, oh, they're kids, their voices are cracking, they're a little awkward, some of their delivery is weird, but like that's what makes it so good is there's this true authenticity of the age we're at play here.
Yeah.
Like I'm like in any other show, Alex would be played by a 19 to 20 year old, 1 year old girl who is, you know, your standard, like, you know, Sabrina Carpenter, like, and you know, they would overdo all these things. And I think it's one of my favorite things about the show is like, yeah, they overdo the fact that Merv's a nerd because they can, you know, play a lot with that, or something they don't revisit in terms of like talking about it. And I'm glad the first time you ever hear his name, he's Merv the Perv.
Well, that is one thing about the show that I clocked. They will use the word perv and pervert. They said it willy-nilly. They do use the word bra. They can mention somebody wearing a padded bra at some point in an episode.
Yeah, it's in Alex's rap.
The word sexy comes up far too many times. But they will not use the word fart. They will only make references to gas. They will not say farting.
That makes it funnier.
I thought that was funny at the time.
It is very funny. I think that's a comedic, purposeful thing. And this is one of the things about this era that I think that Drew and I are so drawn to. There is very much a for us, by us mentality in Nickelodeon at this time. Even the people, even the adults running it feel like big kids. Your Mark Summers, your Cuba Gooding Jr.'s, all these people feel like big kids.
And you say that. This show was created by a creator named Robert Mittenthal. And yep. Robert Mittenthal was known for a number of things at this point. He basically wrote on just about everything. He may not have written much. Like, he's a Pete and Pete writer, for example, but he only wrote two or three episodes. He didn't write a ton. But he was the co-creator of Double Dare. And after this, he would go on to create the show Kablam, which Kablam is, if you talk about it feeling like a kid, Kablam is a show that feels like it was made by kids. And that's, you know, again, you have a lot of adults making these shows, but they are doing it in a way that feels very genuine to the kid experience.
It also feels in tandem with the experience of the young actors. And there seems to be like a little bit of an improvisation because of some of the deliveries of some of the bits where you can be like, oh, they probably did this a couple times, and especially if they're doing it over a weekend. They're like, all right, well, let's do this, 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 and this. What do you got? And this show is interesting because it is so unlike any other kids sitcom of the time, because it while it calls itself a sketch comedy show, it is and it isn't. Like
it's simultaneously both, because they will be talking. Yeah. And again, it comes down to the way that this show is structured, where the show has a theme to it. So like the first episode is all about express yourself, and it's talking about being yourself effectively and expressing yourself. And while looks do matter, it's what which they're very careful about that. They're very careful to say that looks can matter, but that it's really what's on the inside that counts, which is a very careful way of saying that, especially in 1991. But I talked about Mittenhall, the creator, and basically he just wanted this to be a show for kids to be able to look at the concept of growing up and, you know, being able to laugh at it. Like it's they're individuals. They're not conformists. And there's a lot of pressure on kids to conform, to be like everybody else. It is a real hard lesson to learn that it's okay to be yourself, and that each show will have a theme, such as self-expression, extracurricular activities, what people eat, careers. The audience will see the sometimes serious subjects from a decidedly unserious vantage point. I think it's really difficult for kids to laugh at themselves, and this show will show kids it's okay, you know. And that's kind of the idea. Like, we watched four episodes, and one was, you know, expressing yourself, one was just about extracurricular activities, another was about mind games and what, you know, what manipulation was all about, and then knowledge is power, just about intelligence and what that means. But the way that it's structured is that the kids are at the mall, and they're sitting around the mall, and they're talking directly to the camera, and they're, you know, they're ribbing each other, they're picking on each other. And of course, these are kids that you would never expect to actually be really good friends. That's one of the things that,
you know, that's what I wanted to talk about, because I like that it completely subverts the expectations, like the popular girl, the jock, the nerd, and the slacker, and the kind of activist are all friends. And honestly, I feel like that actually mirrors, at least from my experience, the kid experience in a way. Like, we're so used to seeing on TV, like, everything's so segmented. And at least from my experience, it was never like that. Even in college, like, I remember sitting on my couch watching a movie or something with, like, you know, the quarterback of the football team and, like, Brad Anderson and, like, you know, just I'm name checking someone who no one knows who that is.
Yes. I mean, I do. But
yeah, I know. But, like, all these people who come from, like, different backgrounds in, you know, in terms of what their interests or drives are. And, you know, we're all palling around, having a beer and watching whatever it was we were watching at my house at the time or the place I was renting. But like, I felt like that was such a, like, more indicative of the youth experience. And especially because they are constantly ripping on each other, and nothing speaks to me in terms of real friendships than that. Because yeah. So, if y'all could read the texts between me, Mike, and Drew, we are constantly just any opportunity we can to just rib one another.
You can't hear the tears through the messages app. But it's
an upgrade for the 17 Pro.
But it is interesting to me, because I think about it from my experience. I had a lot of the friends like this, and I had a lot of varying friends kind of up until this point. Like, I had a bunch of friends, like, I just, because as you get older, sometimes you get into different stuff and your friend group kind of breaks apart, and that's okay. But that's sort of kind of where this show also succeeds, in that you see all of these kids involved, especially in the extracurricular activities section. You see all these kids having other friends and encountering other people. And I don't know. It's just fun. And the fact that it's all couched in them like referencing, kind of like a Family Guy sketch. Hey, remember that time that, you know, such and such happened to such and such, and they're like, oh yeah, and then they go to a sketch that describes that whole thing, which was very, very silly.
It's so interesting to talk about the format, because, like, it's, you know, obviously sketch comedy has long been a thing, but, like, it's sketch comedy for kids. It's usually been some sort of, like, talent shows, or you can't say that on television. So, like, having something where, like, it felt like kids could be themselves, but also were playing narrative roles too, was really interesting. This certainly leads to what would later, like, you know, like All That, where they would flat out do a full on variety show, SNL style, for Nickelodeon audiences. But I thought this was so unique and interesting, because, like, it is a sketch show, because they do these sketches, but in a way that, like, how most sitcoms of the time would have, like, these dream sequences. They happen in That 70s Show, Boy Meets World. They all do them, where, like, they're imagining their parents or things that happened, like, 30 years ago. They do that. But here, it's intrinsically part of the formula for the weekly episode. And I just find it so neat, because, like, things do kind of carry over a little bit. And we haven't even talked about the vice principal who just actively hates freshmen, and it's a great bit. It does not ever get old.
Mr. Lipman. One of the bits, because so they do have a lot of the sketches are one-offs, but they do have a number of things that
returning
kind of
bits
return as bits, and one of them is Mr. Lipman's morning announcements. And basically, he starts the morning announcements, and Mr. Lipman is this, like, you know, mid-30s. Skinny bald man who hates freshmen so much, and effectively his entire thing is him fantasizing that he's becoming a stand-up comedian and doing his stand-up bit, which is all just one-liners about freshmen.
Yeah, it's like, and he's actively doing these too, because the kids can hear him, because they talk about how bad his jokes are.
He's definitely like imagining himself on stage, but he's still saying them into the microphone. and I didn't write down enough of them, but let's see. What do you call a freshman who wears deodorant? An improvement. You know, what do you call?
There's a lot of good ones. And they're good in, like, the bad way. Like, as a kid, you'd be like, ugh, but, like, you're like, that was really funny.
Yeah.
And there's so much about the show that, like, works, because I feel like the spirit runs through, because this show is clearly made with no money whatsoever.
Not like very, like, very little.
It is like basically a little bit more than your drama department gets.
Which I will say, there are four seasons. I watched the four episodes that we talked about for season one.
Yeah.
I then watched a little bit of season two's first episode just to see the changes that they made. And season two gets a pretty big upgrade. You see much more of the school. There are more hallways and lockers, and they actually do stuff in them. And well, season three and season four, we will talk about later on in the episode, because this is the thing that maybe disappoints me the most about this show. But
it's also cool that the entire first season is all written by the same people and all directed by the same people.
Yes. So Robert Mittenthal and Tim Hill, who co-created the show, wrote every episode of both the first season and the second season. You had Scott Fishman as the director for every episode of the first season, and Tim Hill as the director for every episode of the second season. And then in season three, things get a little different. But
yep.
Did you have a favorite of the sketches that we watched?
I really love the one when they're going to embalm Walter.
That was that one is part of a recurring character named Mr. History. Mr. History.
I love Mr. History.
I love Mr. History too. The simple fact is his history is terrible. It's not good, but Mr. History is this guy that sort of what's the dog from Rocky and Bullwinkle? Mr. Peabody. Yeah.
Mr. Peabody, yeah.
Mr. Peabody who you know, tries to teach history lessons to kids. This one uses whatever happens to be going on in the episode to sort of explain what a freshman of the past would have done. And, you know, a lot of times it's, you know, there was one about Sigmund Freud as a freshman, and one about, and this particular one was back in ancient Egypt with Walter volunteering to demonstrate what the embalming process is, until it's discovered that part of it is that he would have to have a hole drilled into his head.
Which I think Alex says, like, oh, that'd be an improvement.
Yeah.
I did like that one a lot. I love the stuff with Miss is it Dr. Cerebellum?
The school counselor Cerebellum, who just
which is a great gag. It's such a good gag.
Who she like mirrors the people, the kids that she's talking to. That's a fun one. I really liked the one, of course, where Merv goes to the sci-fi club and becomes the captain of the sci-fi club.
The Star Trek thing.
Because it's literally just Star Trek stuff.
It's 100%. And you can even see, like, you know, that he's got the yellow shirt on. They've made legally distinct communicator badges.
But they still have pictures of the Enterprise D, like, that were hand-drawn all around the back of it.
They also sing the theme song in unison.
Yes, and they don't, like, mask it. It's just the TOS theme.
Yeah.
It's just actual Star Trek stuff.
And
I have to remind myself, oh yes, Next Generation was new when the show was on. It was airing on weekends.
Like season three at this time, right?
Three or four. It started in 87, so.
Oh, it was 87? Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that would have been like season.
I remember not liking this character much. Another thing about the show, and Miles and I talked about this off air. I know I watched this show, and I didn't have a lot of memory about this show, but watching certain things in the show, suddenly I am repeating verbatim what is happening. And one of them is just in the first episode, and it's Alex doing this hair care product commercial for Alex's hairline. And her tagline of this is, if you don't look good, I still look good. And if you do look good, I look better. It's just
So watching that first episode, I was like, okay, I had the same experience where I was like, all right, so I knew I watched the show as a kid a lot. I remember the theme song rules.
We'll talk about the theme song in a second.
Yeah. As soon as that first episode started, I'm like, I'm quoting things back.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, it's like all of a sudden, like I entered the Matrix and I could just like see the code. Cause I was just like, I know all of this.
Yes.
How has this been locked away?
Like it's like a door in my mind and my, you know, memory palace opened up and stuff started pouring out of it. I was like, what is happening here?
This was a show that I don't know if I've seen the entire run. Maybe I have, maybe I haven't. Probably have seen most of it. But I loved watching Welcome Freshman back when this was airing, back in the day when it was in repeats, because they kept things on repeats for the duration of most of the 90s.
This one didn't stay in repeats for long. I think they brought it back on one of their like sub cable channels, like the Splat or something like that. But it was
Splat
only
or Noggin.
But it was only in repeats on the main channel through 96, which is just 2 years after it ended.
Yeah, which still makes enough sense to me because I would have been 12. So that would have been kind of like, I still would have been easily watching a lot of this stuff anyway. So that tracks. But I do remember watching Welcome Freshman quite a bit.
Yeah. But I was talking about a character earlier. The character that I remember disliking, but just loved watching this, was Coach Roach. The Coach Roach way.
Or Coach Rochelle.
Well, and that was the thing. Because I had forgotten about Coach Rochelle. I remembered Coach Roach. And then when they have Coach Rochelle, who is it's the same actor, just wearing a female version of the Coach Roach costume, but with the girls instead of the boys. It was
so funny.
So funny.
Like, honestly, all the teachers are very funny. And it's all adults just kind of like, you know, overacting to the max and letting the kids do their thing. And which just goes to show, like, you know, what generous elder actors these were, because like you have some guys who are eating up scenery because they have to play something super like crazy, like the science teacher that constantly sneezes and then wipes it on a sweater, and then when Walter and is it Kevin?
Kevin, yeah.
Go in to sneak into his office to see if he's got more than one of this kind of sweater.
They have a bet of whether he sleeps in the same costume or whether he has a whole bunch or sleeps in the same clothes or has a whole bunch of the clothes.
And they're both right.
And they're both right because he's asleep hanging up in the closet of his classroom. It's like so weird.
But I love that because it's the kind of weird, surreal stuff that kids do come up with, like at the lunch table or something. Yeah, I bet he does this, this, and this. He's such a weirdo. Like that kind of conversation is very true to how kids thought and talked and stuff at the time, and I really do appreciate that. Like, so much of this stuff is over the top and really for its intended audience. I don't know how people who, you know, weren't that this age at the time, or even like, you know, maybe a little bit older, would react to it, but I was the right age at the time, and so obviously I can look back at this very fondly.
And that's another thing that the creator said. It's like, yeah, I mean, he didn't say it out loud quite the way I'm saying it, but it was clear that he's like, yes, though these are high school students, we're aiming this at maybe sixth and seventh graders to kind of see what the high school life is going to be like in a sillier way, sort of take that pressure off.
It also adds a little bit, I mean, realism is probably the wrong term because there's a lot of goofy antics, but at the same time, it still feels somewhat more grounded than like a Saved by the Bell.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure. And it's because, you know, it's not like an actual A to B storyline. It's just a bunch of vignettes that have these like connecting, you know, conversations. I say that for what we watched in season one. There's one last like recurring thing that I want to make sure we talk about, and that is maybe my favorite of all of the bits that they do. The Mervumentary.
The Mervumentary.
The Mervumentaries are Merv basically doing a one man investigative journalism thing. And it's so funny because they really do make it seem like he's like, they do a lot of things where he's like going and reaching for the camera and like, he doesn't have a cameraman. It's just a camera on a tripod in front of him. Like that he's really doing this just by himself. And they really pull that off in a way that I found to be, you know, it worked for me a lot. And it's also just some of the, some of the more clever writing that they had in the show.
One of my favorite bits is when he's sent to Dr. Cerebellum, and she's got the camera out and is asking him questions.
It's like, wait, I'm interviewing you.
It's so good. Some of these bits are so funny, and I mean the cast is I think just right for me, because they're not polished, they're rough around the edges, and this is the story of
you're getting some rough performances out of some of these kids.
Oh yeah, I mean, none of these kids went on to like really do stuff. This is not like a situation where some people, like even in Pete and Pete, would go on to do things or be in big movies. Like most of these kids never acted again. Some of them didn't act for about 15, 20 years and then ended up in a bunch of Texas zombie movies for some reason. that's the name of them. It's like Texas Zombie Showdown or something like that.
It's weird. But
that's one thing I loved about this era is like, yeah, you had some stars pop out. You had your Larissa Ellenix, you had your Danny Tamborelli's and your, oh gosh, I'm blanking on it, Michelle Trachtenberg's. But you also just had a bunch of kids who were just picked and did the best they could, but they were also very naturalistic. And I think that's what always was communicated by the Nickelodeon shows this time, is you really felt like you were watching someone like you on TV.
Yeah.
And it's generally a diverse crowd in almost all of these shows. And it was just something that I always found really interesting about this era, is like everything seemed like it was an unspoken rule, but everything just seemed right. You know?
Yeah. It's just they had just a vibe. And that vibe, unfortunately, I mean, granted, I'm not a kid, and you know, my daughter just spent the last, you know, she spent last summer watching a ton of Victorious and all sorts of these newer Nickelodeon shows that just
with Ariana Grande.
Yeah, they just don't land the same. Because they are...
No, they feel like Disney shows.
They feel like Disney shows. That's absolutely it. They don't feel as grounded or real as something like this did. But I think that was also just true of that after we left the 90s, it just kind of changed.
It literally changed because the head of the company stepped down, and the people who took over and, you know, gave all the keys to the kingdom to Dan Snyder and stuff, they started copying the Disney format of their shows, you know? And I'm not going to try to dunk on Drake and Josh or Victorious or iCarly or any of that stuff. Some of those might be Disney, but they all have this exact same vibe. There's no real like differentiation between a show like that and, you know, a show like even Lizzie McGuire. I think Lizzie McGuire still feels a little bit 90s in and of itself, but you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's a polished product that Disney has their fingerprints on. And Nickelodeon very much feels that way, from about 2002 to now. And it's so unfortunate because, like, I mean, you hear me complain about this all the time. Whenever this subject comes up, Drew complains about it as well. It's unfortunate that this era of kids programming had to end, because I feel like this is exactly what kids of any age and time need. They need to look at the TV and see themselves on screen. They need to see regular kids doing regular kid things and messing up and learning things and also having fun and being authentic. Like the show was so, like, not the show, well, the show, but also Nickelodeon at the time was so punk rock in that way. It was such a different thing. And I always lament that, like, I don't think that's ever going to happen again. And me, I'm the eternal optimist, but I'm just like, I just don't see a situation where a streamer or a channel just has that kind of just vibe ever again.
Yeah, it's truly a lost era, and maybe there's some corner of YouTube that has a creator that's making content like this, but I don't see it. What I see is
there's always exceptions. Like, I mean, that's just kids having a trendy thing to say.
I'm picking on it mostly because, like, this is a whole other conversation about what kids my kids' age are into. And it's just like so much of it is stuff that purposefully doesn't mean anything. And I have like 6-7 doesn't mean anything. It's just right. a funny thing to say that doesn't mean anything. Like we had slang and we had stuff and we had silly things, but at least it was somehow couched in something that was going on.
All the time.
But let me get to my point when I'm saying
All right.
Because I'm talking specifically just more about the whole brain rot concept, just the stuff that is there to exist that doesn't really mean anything. As a dude in his 40s watching this stuff come through kids my age, I do wonder if it's just a reaction to kind of everything else in the world meaning more than it did when we were kids, and that this is their reaction to have something that doesn't mean anything as something to have.
There's something to be said for that. I mean, look at Seinfeld. It's a show about nothing. It means nothing, and that's the whole point.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what makes Seinfeld work. And look, there are exceptions. Like, I'm not saying the entire era of this time period like was filled with like amazing, you know, television that like a set transcended. Like, there's plenty of brain rot crap that we have.
I never want to think about the show Wienerville again.
Well, yeah, there's that. And I'm not just talking Nickelodeon, I'm just saying anything. Like, there is that, look, stuff on MTV, like My Brother's Grunge, like, you know, they're like everything that was kind of coming after Beavis and Butthead, you know, and you're talking about a show about nothing. And I love Mike Judge, but initially that show was about nothing.
Oh, for sure. It was about doing things that animation wasn't allowed to do.
Right, which was very cool. There was some really cool transgressive stuff that they were doing at the time. And I think Mike Judge kind of found his voice once he started doing, you know, the movie and then King of the Hill and kind of really...
I think it's when Mike Judge left animation and became a computer programmer for a couple of years.
Oh, he probably did. But, I mean, he still stayed around. I mean, he, like I said, King of the Hill, the movie, Idiocracy. Like, he still worked. He still did stuff, created things. But... I think one cool thing about this, and I don't know, like, yes, I'm sure there's some people on YouTube. I'm sure there are shows. I mean, we lauded Steven Universe for being something that made us feel like we did when we were the age of its intended audience. Like, because Steven Universe felt like something authentic, you know?
Well, and that's, I think, oddly a thing that animation can get away with more easily than live action.
Yeah, I think you're right, but I don't know why, you know?
We could treatise on it, but I feel like that's maybe not the most interesting conversation for the two of us to have unprepared.
This ain't debate club.
Yeah. Speaking of being unprepared, though, I do have to say I lament this show a little bit, because as we talked about season one and season two, all one director, written by the two co-creators of the show. I could not find the why for this. I couldn't find it. I looked, but I couldn't. I'm sure there was some news article from somewhere from the 1990s that would talk, but nobody was talking about it because nobody had blogs dedicated to kids' content. Blogs didn't exist yet. There wasn't an industry magazine about Nickelodeon content. Or if there was, it's just not on the internet that I could see. There is a change.
I wonder, because I've seen this same thing kind of pop up, is I wonder if it was a reaction to the popularity of Saved by the Bell and whoever was, you know, in charge of the corporate parents were like, hey, we need something, you know, like this.
So
I'm just spitballing.
Yeah, so between season two and season three, you have a number of things happen. For one, the cast changes. You still have Alex, you still have Walter, and you still have Kevin, but Merv and Tara are gone. Merv skipped the rest of high school and went straight to college, which oh, everybody thinks that's really awesome for him. But no, he's a freshman all over again. So, you know, da 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 da. And Tara went to go live with her family for a year in a biosphere project, which is a very on point, funny thing. But the show completely abandons the sketch comedy aspect of it. They're no longer sketches. They're no longer vignettes. It's just effectively a teen comedy. And I'm not saying it's bad. And what I watched, I didn't dislike. It's just, it wasn't.
I also love that the season premiere of season three is called Things Change.
Well, it's also, yeah, it's also called Things Change and Held Back. So I didn't watch enough of the episode to see if there were two sort of big things. But yes, the big thing about this is that Walter did not move up to be a sophomore like his friends did. So you have his friends still being there as sophomores, and you have Walter being a freshman again and interacting with two brand new characters, Grant and Aaron. Aaron and Manny. Grant is also in the show. He's Aaron's older brother. But Aaron was funny because she notably dressed in grunge style attire. So, ooh, it's 1993.
Love it. I love it. And the thing is, I don't actively dislike the idea of the change. Like, it's a thing that happened. But I also... I was really loving what they do, but maybe by the end, but maybe if I watched through all of season one and two and then I see, and then the change happens, I'm like, you know what? Yeah, this was a good idea.
Yeah. It's just one of those things where it's like, it feels like they were trying to reboot the show. And notably, as I said, that every episode of the first two seasons was written and directed by the same people. Not the case in season three and season four.
Right.
You have a smattering of different directors. You have smattering of different writers. Like, there's no consistency after this point. It picks up some consistency in season four, where Tim Hill, who's one of the co-creators, directs a lot of the episodes, and somebody named Adam Weissman, who they don't have anything that I can look up where I'm looking at it right now. Did a bunch of stuff. But yeah, this show drew to a close at the end of in 1994. And wouldn't you know it, what started airing later that year in 1994?
All that.
And when we talk about how this show was a transitionary period, it really feels like that, because All That had a very consistent, like, voice to it throughout most of the run, at least that I watched. Obviously, when they change cast and when they change things like that, it and I know that there was some, you know, creative so-and-so there that, you know, we don't want to talk about, but it's a show that felt very new, even though it was 94 when that show came out. It felt different. And this show, in the episodes that we watched, they had a gag about President Bush and Premier Gorbachev meeting somewhere. Like, the Soviet Union had not fallen when Welcome Freshman started.
Right.
That, like, when we talk about it being a transitionary thing, it really, really was, because it definitely feels so much like the 90s. Characters like Tara especially feel very much like the early 90s, but then characters like Alex feel very much like the 80s.
Which, I mean, I think encapsulates the early to mid 90s very well. I mean, like, we love to think of these decades as having, like, very
cut
off definitions, but there really is, like, between the 87 and 93, a huge blend.
Absolutely. I mean, it happens every decade. Like, movies from 1982 could look like movies from 1977, and you wouldn't really know necessarily.
Yeah, and I love that Tim Hill kind of stayed in, like after this ends, he writes many episodes of Rocco's Modern Life.
Yeah, Tim Hill. Tim Hill is a big time writer for a bunch of stuff. He wrote
SpongeBob guy.
He wrote a bunch of SpongeBob. He wrote the SpongeBob movies. He wrote the Muppets. He directed Muppets in Space, or oh, I'm sorry, he directed Muppets from Space. Like he,
I also always thought I was Muppets in Space.
I did until just seeing it now. He also always casts his wife in things. His wife named
Veronica.
Yeah, Veronica Alessino, who was mm-hmm. in season 3, episode 1 of Welcome Freshman. So, but yeah, the Welcome Freshman is a show that, like, honestly, I'd love, again, much like Space Cases last week, I would love to watch more of this. It,
same.
When it was hitting a lot, and I really want to go through seasons 1 and 2 specifically. I just wish the quality was better, because once again, we are watching rips of people's VHS copies that they recorded on their home TVs.
Yeah. And, you know, I was thinking about the whole, like, you know, DVD conversation, and it's like, or Blu-ray or streaming or whatever. And it's like, it's tough because, like, yeah, we should get this stuff out, but I can also see, like, from a studio standpoint of, like, why they wouldn't, like, release a Blu-ray. So they're like, well, who's going to buy it?
Well, that's what I say. Just throw it on streaming. You got the library,
I
mean, content.
I will absolutely buy it. Or they could do what Warner did for a little while and still does, I think, where they do a thing where, like, they print on demand.
I would
pay an extra $5 over regular to, like, just have the option. You know,
you have 400 episodes of Nick Arcade on Paramount Plus right now. You could put Welcome Freshman on there. I'm just saying. And that's a show that nobody really remembers. Again, it's really the effort factor of it, because you and I are two of the four people in the world that remember the show that were not a part of the cast. I understand.
Right.
I understand that. But this show was really great, and I really enjoyed watching it. And it just makes me pine for an era that is lost, as we have said.
Yeah, I definitely want to go on a search to see if someone's uploaded some, like, really, really good quality of somewhere, and just throw them on my Plex to have, because I would very much love to always have access to this show.
Yeah. Yeah. So with that said, this is where we're going to close the textbook on Welcome Freshman and talk about next week's show. Now, next week's show is a little different, because this one is one that is actually available on a contemporary media format, although whether it's in production or not for you to actually buy, I couldn't begin to tell you. This is also a weird one in that it's technically a Nickelodeon show in the United States, but it was mostly because they tried to get the company that made it to make it, because they were playing an older version of it on this network and wanted a new version to show to kids, to, you know, something that wasn't from the 1970s. Oh, have you guessed what we're talking about? We are talking about 1992's The Tomorrow People. Now, this, as I learned, is actually the second iteration of The Tomorrow People, because there was a British series called The Tomorrow People that ran from 73 to 79. And this is not that. This is the 90s version. And the 90s version is set up into a couple of seasons that are in chunks of 5 episodes as arcs. So we are going to watch the first 5 episodes of the show, The Tomorrow People, which has been retitled The Origin Story. So that is going to be next week. You can find it in a couple of spots, but because it's actually available in a decent quality, we will not be watching commercials for this one. I don't think we will be watching some much better versions. That's right. The Tomorrow People. That's next week on Nickvember 2. In the meantime, if you would like to get in touch with us, you can find us at themoreyounerd.com, where you can find this and every other episode of our show. You can find us on social media at or slash themoreyounerd on just about everything. And you can email us themoreyounerd@gmail.com. That's themoreyounerd@gmail.com. You can also check out our other show, our sister show, if you will, Cosmic Crit. What's Cosmic Crit? Well, it's a game where Miles and I and all of our friends play tabletop RPGs. We are wrapping up our playing of the Alien RPG, which has been very, very fun. It was so much fun that we played a couple of extra episodes, so we're out of October into that. But we are kicking off our conversion from Starfinder 1E to Starfinder 2E. And you can find all of those episodes right now at CosmicCrit.com. You can also go to CosmicCrit.com and look in the upper right-hand corner to a link to the Cosmic Crit Discord. That's where you can go and find your own games to play with the Starfinder Society or Pathfinder Society, or you can just talk to me and Miles all day while we are bored at work. So with that said, gang, we are now going to end the show as we always do. With a rousing
nerd out. Too nerd for y'all.